Hello, and welcome to the Transformational Healer Summit for Helping Professionals. I'm Ariana Gray, and we're here talking to the experts to break through burnout, give your gifts, and love your life. I am really delighted to be talking with Amy Weintraub. Amy is the founder of the Life Force Yoga Healing Institute and a pioneer in the field of yoga and mental health. She's the author of Yoga for Depression and Yoga Skills for Therapists, Effective Practices for Mood Management, and lots of articles and book chapters. Her evidence-based yoga protocol for managing mood is used in healthcare settings globally and is taught in professional trainings and in audiovisual products, including the award-winning Life Force Yoga Series, CDs and DVDs for mood management. I'm excited for us to get to hear Amy. I wanted her to come and let us know about the amazing ways that yoga can have a huge impact on mood, both ours and our clients, even if we're not professional yoga teachers. Amy, welcome.
Thank you so much, Ariana. It's a delight to talk about a practice that literally, I think, saved my life. I might not be here talking to you. I might not have written a book called Yoga for Depression, certainly not a book called Yoga Skills for Therapists, had I not been depressed myself and found yoga many years ago, almost 30 years ago now. So that was transformational for me. And because of my own transformation, and that was way before there was any research, there were a couple of old studies in the 70s out of France, but no contemporary research on yoga and mental health. And I just felt myself become happier once I started learning yoga. And I had been a meditator for many years and was also a depressed fiction writer. So a depressed fiction writer who meditated. So it wasn't until I began an embodied practice that my own mental health began to improve. And I became just passionate about sharing what I felt had saved my life with others and collaborating with researchers and writing articles about it, which eventually, you know, became then trainings and workshops and that sort of thing. So it's been a powerful journey for me. And, you know, I bless each step of it at this point.
Well, and I'm so excited that you're here to share this with us, because this is just the kind of information that, as helping professionals, you know, we need to use these kinds of tools. And I love that you're coming to it from not just a kind of a cold clinical intellectual perspective, but this is actually something that has saved your life. And I know that later in the interview, you're going to talk about this amazing gift that you have for our listeners to experience more of this themselves. But for right now, I just want to jump in and learn more about it. You said that you really feel like this saved your life. Can you tell us some more about that?
Well, I had been on medication probably for about 9 years and in psychotherapy with a psychiatrist. And it wasn't until I started, as I said, I was meditating, but I went to Kripalu Center in 1989, beginning of 1989, and began and started practicing yoga there, and just, you know, as a guest. Mm-hmm. And loved it, and took home at that time, you know, the big cassettes, audio cassettes and video cassettes, because there were no yoga teachers in my hometown in Rhode Island. And so I practiced every day, and within about 9 months, I was feeling really good. Interestingly enough, my prescribing psychiatrist felt that, you know, she had finally stabilized me on a particular medication. And she was really reluctant to titrate me off of it. So, and even more reluctantly, I terminated with her after 9 years and went to a friend's psychiatrist who saw me for a couple of months and said, I don't see you as a candidate for this medication. And we slowly titrated me off that medication. And that was in 1989, and I haven't been on medication since. And I've managed my mood with my practice. And I tell people, and I think that's really an important factor, because what happens is people go to even one class, but certainly a weekend workshop at place like Krakalu or the new 1440 Multiversity that I'll be teaching at, and you know, other places around the country, and they'll feel fabulous, and they'll want to just go cold turkey off their medication. And I really have to emphasize above everything else that people who are on medication, that they work with their prescribing psychiatrist, that the biochemistry does change after just one yoga session, but it wears off. Maybe it'll last 48 hours, sometimes 72 hours, but it really need to establish a daily practice and continue that for a length of time for it to be, and it'll be different for everybody. And not everybody's going to be able to get off medication. Many people will, slowly with supervision from their prescriber, but some people may need a little bit of medication to get them to the yoga mat. And if that's you, I say bless that medication.
Wow, and what an amazing testament to what's possible here with Life Force Yoga, that so quickly people are going to see a change that they're going to want to leap to, you know, coming off medication. And I'm 100% with you that we want to do that slowly and, you know, with appropriate professional support. And yet I think that that's a great testament to what is possible. Can you explain what Life Force Yoga is and like how you developed it for helping professionals who may not even be yoga teachers?
Okay, I haven't really worked on a good elevator speech, Ariana, but I will do my best. I tend to get pretty long when I start describing it. So Life Force Yoga is based on classical Hatha Yoga. However, it's been adapted so that it's appropriate in a clinical setting for mood management. So it gives therapists and other healing professionals the simple skills that may be a 2-minute or a 3-minute practice that might set a kind of a centering for the session that will evoke an intention, not a verbally just like, you know, so what are we going to work on today, but rather a going deeper inside to be beneath the story, beneath the mood, through the practice to find that clear intention for that client's life, and then to come out and to work with that intention and weave it into the session. So there are tools for beginning a session. There are tools for when people become overwhelmed with emotion or triggered by something and are unable to you know, maybe there's hyperventilation, maybe a verging on a panic attack. There are quick interventions that can be done in a clinical setting. They're all done in a chair, or sometimes the invitation is to stand up and to do something, but they don't require a yoga mat. And so these are specific practices. There are 52 practices, actually, with pictures and everything in the Yoga Skills for Therapists book, and we do a lot more in the training itself. The other thing I'd like to say about Life Force Yoga is that we revise our manual every single year, because what we're fine-tuning, because occasionally something that is standard yoga language, like, for example, hold the breath, could be a trigger for someone. I can't hold my breath. You know, they could just, all of a sudden, there could be a kind of freeze or a resistance to that word. So we don't use the word, safe. Everything we do at the beginning of every session is to create a sacred and safe container, but we don't use the word safe, because for some people, the word safe itself is a trigger. So, you know, because there is no safe place, and that's been their experience. Mm-hmm. And so there's little things that we, in terms of language and adapting practices, that we do constantly. So that everyone who becomes a Life Force Yoga practitioner receives the manual, you know, the updated manual, because we are constantly tweaking and fine-tuning
refining
the protocols.
And I'm hearing that these are tools that can be used, you know, in sessions with our clients, but I'm also thinking about what it's like, you know, sometimes between appointments where I'm coming out of one session and I'm stressed and I've got to go into another. And this sounds like, you know, I don't have to whip out my yoga mat to get the benefit of this, that these are small tools that can be used by me or that I can use with my clients to really shift my mood in a very short period of time.
Yeah, something like a bellows breath that maybe 20 rounds or even 10 rounds, inhaling and exhaling through the nostrils, raising the arms up and down, and then a mudra called Adi Mudra, which is like a baby's fist with the thumb inside, and you know, a gentle pause of the breath on the inside, and then something or alternate nostril nadi shodhana, alternate nostril breathing can just simply clear the space, release the tension or the darkness that may have been taken in from sitting with a client with a very severe history of trauma. You know, so being able to use a bellows breath, which maybe takes 30 seconds in between clients, can kind of refresh the system, remove the obstructions, and bring us back to our center so that we're able to meet and greet and attune with the next person walking into the room.
That is so important. So we're not, over the course of our day, building up a heavier and heavier load that we're carrying and then take home and dump on our families, but that we're clearing between. You mentioned earlier that you had started in with yoga before there was any research. Now there is a great deal of research. What is that research telling us? I mean, what is now proven that wasn't when you started?
Well, okay. Overall, in general, yoga has been shown to increase heart rate variability. This is good. This is major because low heart rate variability is indicative of trauma, anxiety, and depression, just general mood disorder. It's when we're stuck in either sympathetic, you know, sort of fight or flight, or the parasympathetic, the sort of unable to get off the couch to change the channel when the remote dies. So what we want is high heart rate variability, that ability to move easily, a flow between appropriate sympathetic activity and parasympathetic activity. It increases GABA levels, which is great for the brain. We've also seen that it increases gray matter in the brain. We've seen there's a couple of studies that have shown, one recent one out of UCLA, that shows that yoga practitioners age match have brains that are 10 years younger than those who are non-meditators and yoga practitioners.
Wow, 10 years younger. That's really significant.
Yeah, and that's getting more and more important to many of us. And then there are several. There's one study that I love that shows the efficacy of combining psychotherapy and breathing practices. There was a study done in which there were women in a domestic violence shelter with pretty low self-esteem were given either talk therapy, yogic breathing, or the combination. And it was the combination of yogic breathing and therapy that made the difference in self-esteem and depression and increased self-efficacy. And then one of our studies, 2008, I've been lucky enough to have a couple of studies published in which I was a consultant, including one that's about to be published, and I've been a consultant on for 4 years. It's a big NIH study, Brown University and Butler Hospital in Rhode Island, that Lisa Ulebacher is the PI on. So they're using life force yoga protocols in that study, huge depression study, but one that was specific on life force yoga had a 63% decrease in mood disturbance in the profile of mood states, and a 53% decrease in depression scores on the Beck Depression Inventory.
Wow, can I stop you there? I just want to say that again, because
sure.
Those are remarkable statistics. So a 60, using Life Force Yoga, there was a 63% decrease in mood disturbances, and then a 53% decrease in depression from the Beck Depression Inventory. That's very impressive.
Yeah, and that was a study published in 2008. And, you know, it's really interesting because we assume, many of us, that simply as, you know, that when you're working with, and both yoga professionals and mental health professionals and other healing professionals assume this, that if someone's agitated, you want to get them to deepen their breath and to watch their breath. And so many, many clinicians will say things like, let's take a deep breath, and you simply notice your breath, notice, you know, that sort of mindfulness language, which is great. But for someone with high states of anxiety or a history of trauma, beginning that way can actually increase agitation. Mm. Just like in a yoga setting, you know, when someone's really anxious, the assumption is that they should go to a restorative yoga class. Well, guess what? For the first 20 minutes, their minds are going to be racing, and it's going to be an increase in anxiety. Mm-hmm. So what we do in Life Force Yoga is teach clinicians and yoga professionals to meet the mood, to kind of join with that mood, do a practice that meets that mood, cutest sensation, not global sensation, like notice the sensation in your body, which is a trigger to anyone with a history of trauma who's living from the neck up. You know, mm-hmm. All of a sudden they've done something really nice and you say, notice the sensations in your body, mm-hmm. Forget about it. It's a mm-hmm. trigger. Mm-hmm. So it's doing something that is really meets that mood, and then taking a moment to really sense into the face, the fingertips, the palms, wherever that practice has gone. For example, if you're doing that, what I was suggesting before, the bellows breath, the arms are lifting up and down, so there's going to be a lot of sensation in the arms, the palms, the fingertips. So cueing to that direct sensation is a way of bringing the client absolutely present to this moment rather than the racing thoughts. So it's a window through whatever mood is visiting or the story, because the mind, you know, the mind's a time traveler. It's going forward, it's going back. The body is present. So when we can bring our clients into that present moment, not by telling them to watch their breath, because that's just the trigger for a lot of people with a lot of anxiety, but by giving them an actual to-do that occupies the mind, that focuses the mind, then mindfulness will arise. And then there's an ability to observe the breath. But meeting the mood is crucial, meeting it first.
Meeting the mood. I love that phrase. So look, would you be able to walk us through a practice so we can, you know, for just a couple of minutes here, we can have an experience ourselves of what this is like?
Sure. I think what I'd like to do is at least the beginning part of, we may not have time to do the whole thing, of stair step breath. Now that's a real yogic traditional breath that's called Anuloma and Viloma Krama. But in Life Force Yoga, we don't use the Sanskrit terms. We call it stair step breath. In fact, you'll notice as I leave this that we don't even use the word breathe or breath, because for some people, I mean, I had a cousin, I was just at a family event, who said, oh, I really like that. I really love yoga, but I don't like that breathing stuff. And it's because she can't do it. Many people, because of trauma, because of anxiety, because of repressed emotional material, and also because of some physical anomaly, but it's usually combined. The mind-body is usually very much part of the story, that body. So if, for example, we've had trauma, there's often constriction in the psoas, the hip area, and that can impact the diaphragm, so we can't take a deep breath. So when you ask someone to take a deep breath, or they're sitting in your office, or they're sitting in a yoga class, and the yoga teacher is saying, breathe down to the bottom of your lungs, they're either not going to be able to do it, so they're going to feel immediately like a failure, or they'll do it and emotional flooding will be the result. And I have to say, I'm not telling you this because it's in any books other than mine, actually, because this is from my own therapeutic mistakes, working with clients as a yoga therapist, and seeing that when I try, as traditionally trained as a yoga teacher, we try to get people right away to breathe to the bottom of their lungs. And if they have not been doing that, then in the very first session, you start get someone to the bottom, breathing to the bottom of their lungs, it can be a trigger to emotional flooding. And that can be really scary. It's fine when there's a release, you know, a kind of cathartic release after session 4 or 5, and you have that therapeutic relationship developed. But at the beginning, it can be really scary. Clients can feel ashamed. So stair-step breath is an alternative practice that meets that shortness of breath, and it meets that little bit of anxiety. It's actually very good for depression, too. And depending on the time, we may have time to do both sides of it. So I'm going to invite all of us to take little steps through the nostrils as though we're climbing a mountain at your own pace. And when you get to the top of the mountain at your own pace, glide down the mountain through the nostrils. And again, little steps of breath as though you're climbing a mountain. And when you get to the top, look out, see something beautiful, and glide down. One more time, little steps of breath. When you get to the top, look out, see something that makes your heart smile, and glide down. And this time, I think we have time for this part. This time, let's take an elevator ride to the top of the mountain. Please ride up, and when you get to the top at your own pace, see something beautiful, and little steps down to see the nostrils. Notice what's happening in the belly. Let's see that part one more time. An elevator ride or ski lift to the top of the mountain. When you get to the top, look out, see something that makes your heart sing, and a little step down. And we'll end by taking a little step up. If we did it initially. When you get to the top, say to yourself, here I am at the top of the mountain, ready. And then slide down. And allow your own natural breath to find you again.
Amy, this feels wonderful. I love that. I want to make sure I'm doing it right. So those stair steps up are me just continuing in breaths up, and then the slide down is out. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And if you're sitting there with a client, well, first of all, it's been nice for you, but if you're sitting there with a client, your eyes are open, that you can invite them. You don't want to say, I want you to close your eyes. It's all about empowering your client. You want to say something like, if it's comfortable, I invite you to close your eyes or soften your gaze. I'll be keeping my eyes open. So if that's okay with you, so I can just see where we are. Because you're watching the belly as they breathe. Because you don't want to be waxing poetic at the top of the mountain and they're struggling to hold, to pause the breath. Right. And for someone, I mean, I just gave you a little taste of it, but for someone who is a client whom you know has a lot of anxiety, you probably wouldn't say, see something beautiful at the top of the mountain without already establishing that image for them mm-hmm. that's their own before mm-hmm. you begin. And you would do that at the very beginning of the session when you do the centering. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you would cue to that sense of, you know, something beautiful in nature, something soothing, calming, serene, in nature, or a face, or a time you felt really comforted and serene. Mm-hmm. And then they would, then after doing the centering, then you would ask them if they would be willing to share what came up for them. And then you could weave that image throughout the session and then refer to it again when you're at the top of the mountain. So you're not just leaving them up there like, oh my God, what am I supposed to see?
Right, on a blind journey.
Right.
I absolutely love this, Amy. I am going to practice this, the stair step, we're not calling it breath, but the stair steps. And I also...
Well, you can call it stair step breath, yeah.
Okay, stair step breath.
What I'm not doing, which you would do in yoga, would be to inhale, or inhale 5 times, you know, and take 5 inhalations through the nostrils, exhale through the nostrils all the way down to the bottom of your lungs and drawing the navel back to the spine. I mean, that's this yogic way of describing it. But we're having the same effect, but we're taking away some of the, like, oh, I don't like that. I don't think I can hold my breath at the top of the mountain. Or we don't say hold. You know, so we're making it accessible, adaptable. Because these practices are so valuable to everyone. And we don't want their religious beliefs to get in the way, or their political beliefs to get in the way.
Or their trauma or history.
Yeah. We want them to be able to be accessible for everyone. And I mean, I don't know how much more time we have, but one of our clinicians, Debbie Lubetkin, who's our director of mentoring, she's a psychologist in New Jersey. And there's a fabulous story in Yoga Skills for Therapists about her work with a traumatized, a person with a trauma history, a cutter. She had eating disorder, a woman in her 40s. She would come in completely revved up, talking nonstop. And they, after about the third session, Debbie taught her Brahmari deep breath, which is a humming breath and involves a mudra, which is a hand gesture that withdraws the perception of the senses. So it really takes the client inward. She loved it. She practices it. It's very self-soothing, and she wants to start every session with it as a way of just really coming home. It breaks through whatever the clutter in the mind, whatever the...
Right, whatever the mental clutter. And I, you know, love this image that you gave us about meet the mood, you know, meeting, whether it's, you know, for me, whether it's for my client or where I am myself in a moment, to meet myself there and to be able to use these really clear, amazing life force yoga tools to have this incredible transformation. I know that you have arranged for a free gift for our listeners to be able to experience more of this. Could you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yes, it's a Life Force Yoga Nidra for mood management. Yoga Nidra has had a significant amount of research behind it. It's a deep relaxation, but it's more than a relaxation in that it works with the 5 koshas. I won't go into the Sanskrit. But the physical body, the breath body or the energy body, the mental body, the emotional body, and the bliss body, all of which we live in at the same time. We're always there. But if we are constricted in any one of those areas, the physical body, the emotional body, it denies us, it blocks us from having access to that bliss body, which is there for us. It's always there. But we are too constricted to access it. So what Yoga Nidra does is it's a protocol that includes a body scan for the physical body, breathing awareness, and the exploration of the opposites of sensation, emotion, and belief, and then an expansion into Ananda Maya Kosha, which is the bliss body, joy, abundance, and wherein the opposites of grief and joy and loss and abundance can be held in and not in a less constricting and gripping form, so that it's shown to have really good effects for survivors of trauma. It's been used in the military. There's several studies that have shown its use in VA. We use it here in Tucson. Randy Todd, who's one of the lifeless yoga practitioners and is a clinical social worker on the trauma team at the VA in Tucson, teaches yoga nidra not only to his trauma clients, but also he does a session for the medical staff every week. It's that healing, that it's a yogic meditation. It's done lying down, it's guided, and it has lots of good research behind it, including this particular practice, which if I can just quote you, the this practice was, it was written up in a study. It, let's see, the median BDI went from 30 to 16 at the third study visit of using yoga nidra and in psychotherapy. And then the, let's see, the BAI, the Beck Anxiety Inventory, decreased, went from 27 to 13.
Wow.
Representing, you know, a change in anxiety from moderate to very low. And that was, yeah.
This is absolutely fantastic. I'm amazed that you're sharing this with us for free. I got to tell you, you had me at Bliss Body. I really want to encourage our listeners, click on this link. What an amazing resource. I could use some more bliss in my life. So I am going to do this. Amy, thank you so much for your time. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Amy Weintraub, the founder of Life Force Yoga Healing Institute, who has been so kind to spend time with us today. Thank you so much, Amy.
You're welcome, Ariana. It's been fun.
This is Ariana Gray, host of the Transformational Healers Summit for Helping Professionals. Be sure to join us for our next interview to get inspired, to break through burnout, give your gifts, and love your life. And as you're listening to this, remember, you really are making a difference.